Hello, welcome to The Ultimate Gamer. I'm your host, Rob, and it is Stream Streak Day 15. That's right, 2 weeks in a day, not doing too bad. And I'm joined by two legends, heroes, like, I'm not sure what to call them. Some people say they're part man, part myth, but I only know them as my friends and people who I love. I am joined by, is there an order? And if there is, I'm going to start with Peter.
I was gonna say we're legendary heroes, but whatever.
Yeah, I'm joined by the Falcon and Mr. Val Heffelfinger, two co-hosts of the 40k Stat Show and legends in their own right. Welcome, gentlemen.
We got the name of the show right. Way to go!
Yeah, how's it going, buddy?
Oh, you didn't get it right.
It's going really well, thank you very much. So whereabouts are you two located? In case you're unaware, Peter is at the top, so the Falcon's at the top and Val is at the bottom, in case you're watching us live.
Ooh, yeah. As normal.
You're really friends with me here today, Rob.
Well, you're already getting some love in the chat, Val. Dexamon says, oh my god, the mustache guy is even hotter than Nathan Prescott, which is...
Oh.
I don't know who that is, but I'm super into it.
I'd have to agree with him. I was hoping that was actually Colonel Cabbage that said that, because that's a great name. but they're not as much of a mustache fan as MPEG Jesus.
Right, so introduce yourselves if you can. The Falcon, who are, in case people don't know who you are, could you just introduce yourself to everyone, please?
Sure. I'm Peter the Falcon Colosimo. I live in the northern reaches of Alberta, Canada, and I run 40kstats.com, and I partnered up here with my buddy, Val Heffelfinger, from 40k Stats Center. I provide stats for 40k tournaments from around the world. Around the world. That's about it. I don't know much else to say.
One of my very favorite things that I also see you do sometimes is occasionally someone will post some asinine comment on a Facebook thread, and then someone just tags you in. Like, kind of like a wrestling match where they just the high five, and then Stone Cold comes in for the full stunner with a whole bunch. And it's never just you're wrong. All the data gets brought in. It's deeply funny to me every time I see it. Do you enjoy those moments, or do you hate them? Do you revel in them?
It depends. 99% of the time, it's the best. It's absolute best. I am a master pedant, so anything I can do to emphasize that is I do my best.
Val, how do you feel about your co-host's pedantry?
Well, he's not that pedantic, you know, but people call him in for things because I think most of all he likes to be smugly right, as most Canadians. And so, you know, when you tag him into those type of fights, it just gives him an opportunity to really fly, you know, soar above everyone, morally, logically, all of the above. That's what Pete likes to live.
I love
soaring above your heads.
Dave Fraser says, we here in the UK know better than to rely on, upon the views of those so-called experts. Yeah, it seems to be a very Canadian thing to be relying on experts to do stuff. Both the English and our American brothers not so keen on that generally.
Well, you know, both of our countries have prime ministers in quarantine. So, you know, we have that much in common at least.
Yeah. And we only want to see one return.
Thoughts and prayers, guys. Thoughts and prayers.
What show are we on again?
The Honest Wargamer. Yeah, so you can say as you like. So, the bottom panel, Mr. Val Heffelfinger, who Owen Jackson in the chat says is my roving reporter inspiration. He has maximum swaz.
Swaz. That's probably a subgenre of swag that people of my complexion are allowed to say, I assume.
Yeah, I think swaz is fine. I think swaz is absolutely okay. Could we find out who you are in case we don't know?
Oh, I'm allowed to introduce myself now. How wonderful. I thought maybe you and Pete would make out for a little while longer. I am Val Heffelfinger. I have been a 40k personality, if you will, for some time. I started on Chapter Tactics. I was also on Forge the Narrative. And then when Pete started 40kstats.com, I thought, why not start a website that's completely, why not start a podcast that's completely unrelated called 40k Stats Center? Not the 40k Stats Show, Rob. That's your show. You have the stat show. And then Pete and I cranked out 32 episodes before the world failed and fell apart. So civilization failed before we did, guys.
That's good. Is it? Do I say sometimes say that it's the stat show and that's wrong? Is that because we set up the AOS stat show before you set up the 40K stat center, and I'm upset that you didn't follow the nomenclature? Is that why?
Do you mean that you probably scrambled, you know, your concept to air fast once you heard about my brilliant plan? Sure. Yeah.
Okay. No, all right. Fine. we'll bandy who decided. I think actually the Lord of the Rings stats guys, or maybe even the Blood Bowl stats guys, got there ahead of us.
Oh, Blood Bowl. Oh, guys, I've embraced the Blood Bowl 2 life, and I'm having a great time. Pete beat the crap out of me the other night. And subsequently, I drew somebody.
I saw you were playing the other day. I was wondering if that's just become your new thing, is just to hammer out as many Blood Bowl games as possible.
It is my new reality. It is fantastic. But that being said, like, Blood Bowl is such a naturally... It's hilarious. Like, that is literally Games Workshop's competitive game. Like, people who play Blood Bowl, I mean, this is weird. They play it to win, which is great.
Yeah,
it's just like an accepted part of
the
culture.
In Italy, like 4 years ago, they had like 1,000 people at their world championships. It's bananas.
Yeah, they do like a World Cup.
It's like, so now we know. So, well, with my two guests introduced, these two legends, I just want to say thank you, everyone, for joining us live. And if you listen to the podcast, number one, you're going to be getting an audio treat listening to both these two gentlemen talk. And also, don't forget to stay hydrated, especially in these trying times. And thank you to everyone on the On Sport Gamer Patreon.
Does that mean I'm not supposed to drink coffee?
No, you can do that, but I'm sure you're drinking a correct amount of water as well.
Sure.
I'm pounding down waters. I got nothing else to drink in this house for another week.
Before we talk about Stat Center stuff, which is what I'd like to talk to you both about today, if that's okay, is I'd like to just get to know you both more, because sometimes the content creators such as yourselves, we don't get to see behind the screen a little bit. So how did you both enter into the hobby, your both personal journeys? Ooh. Take it away yourselves.
Give her Val. No, I opened the intro.
We're in a Canadian standoff. After you. How did I start? I've told this story 100 times. I remember the first game of 40K I saw was in my friend's basement, and he had the second edition starter, and I played him with using the orcs and the paper dreadnought. So yes, kids, the second edition starter had just a cardboard cutout with a picture of a dreadnought on it, so you could aspire to one day actually own an orc dreadnought. And I remember he rolled a bunch of 3-up saves, and I thought to myself that 3-up saves are the most OP garbage in the world. Perhaps I didn't use that phrasing, but it was my first saltiness about 40K. It was also my first game. After that, I played with a bunch of my bros in their basement. I first played Warhammer Fantasy. Like, my first army was Empire. Because one of my friends who we started with said that 40K was dumb. And I was like, oh, yeah, 40K is totally dumb. And then so I didn't play 40K. And then third edition happened. We played that. And then high school ended, and I didn't touch it for 14 years until I sucked really badly at Battlefield 4. And I was throwing my headset at the ground every night and very upset. And I was like, why am I doing this? I suggested to a friend of mine that we start playing 40K again. And he said, yeah, enabling me to then fall down a rabbit hole 5 years long. That has involved me traveling around the world, starting a podcast with a guy in the Arctic, and talking to people at 7 o'clock in the morning in the United Kingdom.
What ho? So
things got out of control.
As British folk, we're talking to us.
Yes, yes. I'm from the colony.
Well, that's a good journey. I especially like the fact that you had an initial emotional reaction to it, because a lot of people would never describe you as emotionally responsive to the stats or information, or generally gaming.
Me?
What are you talking about? Sarcasm.
I mean, I like this. I'm all about the connection here, pal. And, you know, I like that we're all making good use of technology to stay connected in this time of social distancing. That's nice.
I think it's really nice. I think the best bit about the hobby is the people you get to meet along the way, to quote my friends, the Rage of Sigmar. And, go on.
I'm a guy with a deep sense of hobby shame. I don't actually have a mustache. This is just a disguise for the show, much like I have a fake hobby name. And that's mostly because I was incredibly embarrassed about toy soldiers for many years. And now I have all these friends who don't use my real name, and it feels really strange. So I made a lot of genuine connections that I wasn't expecting, and I made them all over the world, and it's really quite magical. I really love my descent into tabletop gaming. It's been awesome.
Decent, decent. Pete, your turn. You're up.
My turn. Well, exactly the same as Val. But word for word. everything happened exactly that way.
We're twin brothers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, exactly.
About, I'd say 10 years ago now, 12 years ago. How old's my son? Just before my son was born, I was looking for a new hobby.
I like that I looked at you being like, I have no idea. I don't know how old.
Yeah, about 12 years ago now, I started the hobby. I was playing some board games with some buddies, trying to find something to do with my life because I was about to have a kid. And unlike most people, I decided to pick up something that was more time investing than what I previously did. I was playing some board games. A friend of mine, well, not even a friend, he was an acquaintance at the time, had at the end of the day was saying, you know, hey, I think you'd really like this Warhammer game that we play at my game store that I run. So I was like, okay, whatever, sure. So he invited me out on a Tuesday night. I went and played some Warhammer Fantasy Battle 6th edition? Probably 6th edition at the time.
Kryptonians Lizardmen?
Yeah. So, well, actually, that was the box set, I believe, but I was playing Orcs versus Empire, and I loved it. It was the best. I just had such a great time just ripping stuff up.
What is that? Like, is that a gene? Like, I don't know. I think, unfortunately, Games Workshop does call it the hobby gene, but, like, there is something, like, where you're just like, oh, I don't know why.
Well, I thought it was the nerdiest thing ever up until I started playing. That was the best part, was I was like, oh, there's no way I'm going to like this. And I'm just going to be in a room filled with, like, the most stereotypical things you think of when you're playing this game. And I remember my buddy Craig at the time, he was like, come on in, ask for Chris. He'll be there to play you. I was like, okay. So I walked into this room, probably about 15, 20 tables set up. There's about 12 or so guys in the room playing games. And I'm like, hey, I'm looking for this Chris guy. I have no idea what's going on. Super awkward. And this dude, he'd probably be about 6'4". Absolutely the most handsome person I've ever seen in my entire life. Like he was wearing like...
Most handsome man in the Maritimes?
Yeah, like, he's wearing, like, an ascot, and I was like, are you a model? Is this a trick? He's like, no, and he had a super deep voice that I can't even imitate because I've got this, like, squirrel thing going on. Anyway, he was like, oh, yeah, no, are you Peter? Yeah, we're here to set up a game. I've got your models right here. I'll teach you how to play. And so we had this great time. He's like a prison psychologist.
Your handsome guy voice sounds a lot like your pervert guy voice, just so you know. What's very sexy?
I can't. I really only got two voices, Val, especially at 5 in the morning. Anyway, but yeah, that was it. I got super hooked right away. I bought a Lizardman army because Mexican, like Aztec dinosaurs, you can't go wrong. And yeah, lived a high life on Warhammer Fantasy Battle until Age of Sigmar kicked me out.
I just want to say that unlike a lot of culturally appropriated like Warhammer races, I don't find Lizardmen particularly racist.
No, unlike a lot of them. Yeah, I agree. possibly because of the dinosaurs. I think
that puts you off.
Nobody. Wait,
man, if you added some animal familiars into each of the races, would you find that they would be less on the nose culturally?
There are some pretty on the nose, you know, stand-ins out there that I don't even want to say.
Good. Yeah.
So yeah.
I apologize. Yeah, hey, no, it's okay. Age of Sigmar booted me out at the time, and I switched over to 40K like most of my friends, and War Machine Hordes. Did that for a little bit. Moved to the end of the world. I'm in the most remote place I think I could possibly be, and really, really got into 40K once I got up here about 4 years ago.
Is that because there was a community there that you played with, or like it was something about the isolation, you know, the feeling alone and not really being around people who are overly social that you thought 40K is the one for me.
Just like,
it was actually it was the community aspect. I had all these armies for all these different games back home because we had a pretty active gaming store and club. So I had like Infinity and basically any tabletop game I had something for just in case I could play somebody. And so I kind of did a quick Facebook search for high level. That's where I live, guys. Google it. Groups and found this Warhammer community. And it was, I was like, well, there's like 8 guys up there that play. I'll keep my Warhammer stuff and sell everything else. And when I got here, they had a little local gaming store that's run by the high school, which I thought was amazing and I wanted to help support. So I dumped a ton of paychecks into that because I moved up here by myself. My family stayed on the east coast of Canada for the first 3 months of my tenure up here. So I had nothing better to do in an empty house with just a bed and a TV but build and paint models.
Well, I do other stuff with a bed and TV on my own.
Well, eat, I mean, like, there's time for that.
Eat pizza and watch Tiger King. Because that's what I do.
Exactly. sleep and eat food. Watch TV.
I also watched a lot of Finnish crime dramas on Netflix. That was just...
Is that just what came in on the antenna?
Oh, yeah. It was like...
Because you're just so north?
Yeah. It was across like Netflix the Arctic Circle. We know where you are. We know what you people like.
So you just naturally... you just naturally start to understand Finnish the further north you get.
Oh, yeah. No, by the end of it, I was not even using subtitles. I was just like, I know what's going on now.
It's basically just Elvish, guys. It's easy.
Yeah, I had my little Lord of the Rings primer in the back. Yeah. Oh, it was great.
We've had an interesting thing in the chat, just talking about Peter's thing a moment. Angle said, I always remember teaching this towering, blonde, muscular, beautiful man to play with his amazingly painted space wolves because he was a maths teacher and was starting a club at his school. And then the follow-up, I still see him at the gym sometimes.
Ooh.
Not really.
But only in the mirror? Like just sort of looking at him?
Oh!
You know? Anyone at, I don't know, just in case people in chat have never been to a gym, there's mirrors on all the walls. And so you can see.
Yeah. Self-gratification is a big part of going to the gym. That's why I'm there all the time.
So,
all the time, 3 times a day.
So at some point you started to do the stats, right, for 40K. Like, what was the inspiration? What was the lead up to that?
The other guy on this call is actually part of the inspiration for that. I was sitting alone in an airport tower, because that's my job. I talk to airplanes, and probably around, I don't know, 8 o'clock at night, thinking about my life. And I started listening to some 40K podcasts to keep myself entertained. I pulled up a Chapter Tactics episode. This would probably have been January-ish, because I believe that's when that episode was put out. And this fella, Val Heffelfinger, and Pablo Martinez were going over stats from the, I think, 2017 ITC season that Val had kind of put together haphazardly from like a gigantic, stupid spreadsheet that he was sent from
I heard you describe this as haphazard on BiffPod recently, by the way. And I'm and
it wasn't,
you know,
BiffPod. I didn't bring it up there. I didn't go there.
Yeah, they asked you. Yeah, they did. They asked you point, man. They asked you point blank. How?
Oh, was
how,
it? I don't remember that episode.
Wow! You should work for the WHO.
Literally, like 2 episodes again on a very good podcast. Pete told the story, but nonetheless, Besco's pairings. There's something about being nice to people that gets you things, guys. This is just what it is. So for many months, I had sort of leaned into Paul, who runs Besco's pairings, about maybe getting some data, and then he put me in touch with some of the guys who run things there, and they gave me, and lots of people were asking, they gave this guy, who has rudimentary understanding of Excel, all of the data, and I put it in a pivot table, Pete. That's all I really wanted to say. It was a pivot table. It's an advanced function. Okay.
It's beautiful. It was, to me, it was beautiful. Because I was like, I'm super interested in that kind of thing. I am a bit of a sports nut on the side, so all the stats, I just love it. So it was a great episode to listen to. And as I was listening, and they were talking about, you know, oh, I wish we had, like, one of the things Pablo and Val both brought up multiple times was, you know, oh, I really wish that like we had more of this, that we actually had, you know, granular data, because a lot of it was, well, I think it's this because of this. And
I said that I do not have the patience to actually sort through all this stuff.
You
and
did.
Good. Someone else should do that. And yeah. I sent that into the universe.
And this guy in Northern Alberta responded. So a couple of months later, they were going to do Bay Area Open. And I messaged Pablo. I emailed him a couple times about 40K stuff just because I was bored out of my mind. And I was like, hey, do you guys need somebody to run stats for your events? And he said, sure, whatever, buddy, because he had no idea who I really was.
No.
And that I was a crazy person. And so yeah. I did. I pulled out everything for that year's BAO, like lists, the whole enchilada. I probably did, I don't know, 12, 14 hours worth of work on it. Sent him this giant spreadsheet, and then we started a kind of a beautiful relationship after that, because he had had multiple people tell him that they wanted to do the same thing, but no one ever kind of followed up, or if they had, this is just the story I've been told, so I don't know, maybe people did, and he forgot, but I just kept doing it. I kept doing it day after day. I went back and calculated stats from tournaments from a couple months prior to that. And after doing it for, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, I built a website to post it all to. It might have even been less than that now that I think about it. But
I'm trying to think, like, at what point I became even aware of 40kstats.com. Because I guess...
Well, you and I were talking before I made the site.
Is that true?
Yeah, because you, Pablo had me on the show, a couple weeks after BAO, I want to say.
That's right, you sent us the spreadsheet, and I was like, we need to get this guy on the show, and then yeah. You came on the show, and you were really adorable and nervous, and then you left the show, and I said to Pablo and everybody on the show at the time, we need to get Pete on the show, or else he's going to go on someone else's show, and that's how we got you.
Yep, and you've regretted it ever since.
And then I took you from that show and I put you on a show just with me.
Yeah. I see how this works.
Trap.
Wow. Wow.
Like a huntsman spider.
There's an interesting question come up in the chat because, and I was going to, I'll go into more detail on this later, but one of the questions, one of the things that I get to talk to you about, I'm not sure if you're aware, but obviously we do through the Honest War Game, is a guy called LLV who's My The Falcon. And he's also based in Canada. And he also does, and he's also out in Bumsfuck, nowhere, wherever it is, somewhere, I'm not sure. So all of the stats done for the two, I'm not sure where the Blood Bowl stats are done, but at this stage I'm feeling like they're done in Canada. What is it about the Canadian aesthetic and thought process? Is it your reliance on experts for things that really encourages stats creation?
I think it's my ability to spend 20 hours a week looking at numbers and just having a bit of a weird, what is it, Val? It's like
a pathological determination to finish a job that no one expects you to do.
Yeah, it's like a Protestant work ethic that's been knocked up to 11.
Yeah, it's like a psychosis more than an
effort. It really is.
Yeah.
It really is. I actually, like, there have definitely been days where I've been behind and I've been nervous for no reason. And I've had to, like, stop myself and been like, what are you doing? Like, no one.
It all seems as whether, like, I had wanted to do a show for a very long time. And I think one of the other main reasons I was like, I need to do this show with Pete is because I would have gotten to episode 1.5. Like, if I didn't feel like Pete would be severely disappointed in me all the time. So that has kept me going. And I've barely kept up.
And to be fair, it hasn't stopped me from being disappointed in you.
That's true. That's true.
It's not easy, right? Like, obviously I do this for work. So, and you guys obviously already have jobs and they're very important jobs and you try really hard at them anyway. So you guys do this in your spare time, which I think is incredible. I really do. Spare time, work time, whatever, you know, someone pays the bills. But I
traffic controller where there's no traffic.
Well, one of the things that came up when we've done the stats, because LLV also does the stats, and I'd like to ask about when you initially started to put them out, There's been some reticent, or initially there was some strong pushback from the Age of Sigmar community when we started to introduce stats or talk about stats specifically. And later on, we're going to talk about some of the stuff that came up at LVO, because you guys did a show post LVO, which I fucking loved. I'd love to talk about that more. But did you initially have any pushback from the community at all, or the wider sense, or did you experience that or not at all?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, early it was a lot of, you'll never be able to get enough stats. That was the big one. It was, there's no way that you'll ever be able. Yeah, you'll ever be able to track enough games for this information to be worth it, right? Because at first, you know, I was doing these big events like BAO, and they're like, well, this doesn't mean anything. It's just BAO. And then it was, well, this doesn't mean anything. It's just BAO and SoCal and like four other events. And it just kept, it was only when I hit about, I don't know, 20 or 30,000 games recorded that kind of went away. And then it was then it became, well, I can do it better. And I said, super. I got that like a few times, and I would be like, great, yes, this is what I want. Because I don't know. And I think it threw people off, because I was like, I'm not a statistician. There was a point in my life where I did data analysis for a large corporation. So I do have like a background in it. But like, it's not my thing. So when people would message me and be like, oh, you know, I bet I could do this 100% better, I'd be like, great, here's all my data. Go for it. And then they would be like, oh, well, how do I get new data? And I'd say, well, you have to go into Best Coast Pairings, down under pairing code. I gave them all the websites I use, and you track it all. You say, oh, okay. Well, what do you mean? Well, you type it out. Well, you can't just do that. Well, you can, because that's the only way, because they have terms of service that don't allow you to just take it, right? And so it was a whole thing.
You can tell he's Canadian because he didn't ignore the terms of service. He just decided to hand scribe 20,000 lines of information.
Yeah, decent.
Because I was allowed to do that. So that's what I did. And so that was a thing for a bit. And now it's, most of that's gone away. I very rarely see a lot of pushback any longer. It's been months since I've seen any pushback, really, outside of the occasional, well, you don't really have enough data to say that. And most of the time, it's when someone else is quoting my data that they get that. And the person's probably right, because a lot of time they'll be like, oh, I just looked at these last like 2 days worth of events, and Necrons are the best. And you have to be like, well, maybe pull a little back.
Well,
it has been off like awesome, because I guess when we did that first show when I did that first thing with Pablo, it was just so cool to actually know like what factions made up the meta. That's all we talked about. We talked about like what factions made up the meta as reported on BCP. We talked about maybe a little bit of win percentage. I don't think so. Yeah, I think it was mostly like so. It was like share of the meta, and it was the first time like anyone had any meta whatsoever on how many people played Space Marines. And it was just, it blew my mind how cool that was, because I've always had this passion for like, I just hated listening to podcasts, and there are some well-known ones out there where they just pull stuff out of their butts, and they're all, it's all 100% hot takes, ill-informed hot takes, even in those days. And well, no, you at least have like this statistical basis for the conversation. And when Pete made his site and it started getting into like into vogue that like people would actually check their opinion there, now it's used like, you know, you say you tag Pete as that sort of trump card. That's only if you really need to. That's if the guy denies the data in the first place. But a lot of times you'll see conversations online now that are driven by these stats, and it's not just grabbing opinions out of their butts like, you know, like Daka Daka always was or whatever. You know, my local FLG, it's like this. Well, no, we know the shape of the global Warhammer 40,000 meta. That's all thanks to Pete. And it just makes discourse, even though it's still awful and aggravating, at least it's not entirely fictional. And that's such a wonderful service that Pete has provided for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think it's phenomenal, the work that Pete does. And similarly, for LLV, who does the AOS stats, because we, as I stated, we got a lot of pushback initially with many of the same threads of information. But we could go into the dynamics of the top-down situation later, I think. But one of those, I think the very best thing, like you said, Val, is I'm most interested in the meta stats almost all the time, like the population of armies that you're currently seeing, especially when, like, You can have a sample size over a long period of time, definitely, but in short spaces of time when the paradigm of a meta can shift quite quickly, it's quite interesting to actually see which armies have turned up in the past 2 to 3 months. You know, generally what's about, and then because what's about is what problems am I going to have to face, and I've always found that really interesting. Sorry, Pete, you got something to say on that, or?
No, that's great. Like, I was just going to agree with Val. Like, that was the main reason why I started this whole thing, was to kind of get rid of a lot of the anecdotal stuff. I didn't want to prove anybody wrong. I just wanted, like, the background. Sometimes it's been nice, but for the most part, you know, even the, like Val said, there's a lot of these people that, you know, they give their opinions and this is what it is. And most of the time they're right, but I like having the numbers there to be like, yeah, what this guy's saying makes sense. And then when you get the occasional, you know, dude on Reddit or whatever, that's like, space wolves are so broken, I don't know how to deal with them. They win everything. Then you can be like, well, they've never won a thing. I don't know where you, what...
Yeah. That's the most anecdotal one, is like custodies for a while there, just like, and not even like the grab tank custodies version. Yeah, it was just like regular custodies just ruined people's lives at friendly neighborhood game stores. And I would have had no idea about that if I didn't see random people complaining about the OP-ness of custodies all the time on the internet.
Yes, I've seen some real hot takes, which has made me chuckle plenty. So one of the things about the stats, I think, that's next, and I'd like to ask you both about this, is because then you get onto like, and this has been a personal journey for me, so I'm so happy I get to share it with both of you, is the interpretation of those stats. So obviously, I don't know if either of you have got big sports backgrounds, and I'd like you to answer that in a minute, but obviously I don't in any way, shape or form have any sort of sports background. I don't absorb it.
You fight drunk people for a living, that's a sport.
In England it is. It's actually how often you meet your partner for marriage. But the interpretation of that information has been something that's been an ongoing process for me. Like, and I've been really lucky to have LLV give some of that stuff. One of the things that's happened recently is we have a faction in AC Sigmar called Cities of Sigmar. I'm not saying that you guys aren't aware, just in case, and for the people at home. And they generally have a very average win percentage. Like, they hit that sweet 50% mark, which is nice. But they have a standout singular build. Because you can build that, it's a bit of like a Space Marines book where there's a lot of like sub faction choices, but one of them really, really does stand out in the Halahar build, which is in a team based environment incredibly good and incredibly effective, and in a singles environment pretty much as well, with a couple of odd counter picks. But when you look at the stats and you go, Cities of Sigmar, they are an average army, that's not actually close to the case. They're the army that you struggle against in a competitive tournament when you come up to it. It's just the stats don't really seem to say that. So how have you both found interpreting the data information? Have you had any revelations? Like, what's gone on for you there?
Well, Valerie here created a really wicked stat called TWIP, Tournaments in Winning Position, and that's helped a lot with that, because I noted the same thing pretty early on. You can't just use win rate or even like faction representation, although sometimes they are they'll definitely be a factor. We had things like in 40K Orcs for a long time. They had probably the like highest tournament win percentage in terms of like how many events they were actually winning or going undefeated at, and maybe coming in second place, because you Brits love to have, you know, like 700 person events with only 3 rounds or whatever you do. No one wants to have a 6th round over there, apparently, except John
Hinton. They're getting better. They're getting better.
But anyway.
We have shamed the UK into playing an extra game.
If you're more, I really do think it's us. I like to take advantage. But so tournaments in winning position is one of the statistics we use for that. And that's it. It takes a look at how many events in a faction gets to 4 wins before it suffers their first loss. Because most events are 5 rounds long. If you get to the 5th round without a loss, chances are you're in that top 4, probably on the verge of victory. So that has become a very interesting stat to look at. Average first round loss is also another statistic that I use to kind of judge how a faction's actually performing. So that's just like, what's the first round that a faction generally loses in? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, if we're having a lot of 6-round events. And you can pull a lot of data out of just those two data points. And especially when you compare that tournaments and winning position to their faction representation. So I have like a TWIP ratio. So if, you know, 20% of all events are topped by orcs and they make up only 5% of the meta, then, you know, that's a very strong faction. And I use orcs as an example because just like Cities of Sigmar, there's a lot of orc players and there's a lot of really bad ones. So when orcs were kind of at that top peak where they were, you know, they'd won, I don't know, 15 or 20 events, or they'd been top four at so many of them, they had like a 47% win rate. So if you looked at just win rate, they looked like garbage. I actually had one of my Facebook arguments where I had to bring out all this data once specifically because there was a bunch of people that were like, orcs are terrible. They're so bad in this meta. And I had to be like, here's like the last 6 events that have all been won by orcs. And
I think that's actually where the data has been the most illuminating, is not necessarily, I think it's been cool to see that generally speaking, the consensus of what's good, even like right out of the gates, was right. Like, it was confirmed by the numbers. So like everyone who at the time was like, oh, Inari aren't OP, like you gotta be good to be able to use Inari, and then like Pete was like, no, actually they dummy the meta in ways that no one else comparably does, and then so like that was great to be able to prove that like decisively that like certain armies were problematic. But then beyond that, on the sort of the upside, is being able to prove that some armies are underrated. And there's been a couple times over the months that Pete has spotted things that were sort of ascendant, most specifically using Thousand Sons, eventually behind screens of Plague Bearers, which was Jim Vessel's, you know, dominant list for most of last season. Pete was spotting like Thousand Sons having success, you know, very early on in the year before, sort of around December. I think you were starting to talk about like look out for Thousand Sons.
Yeah, November, and December.
There were just a couple prescient moments. And these days, like before, you know, the COVID stuff went down, like he was like, everyone has been talking about how Gene Stealer cults aren't worth playing, and Pete has been consistently pointing out that like Force of the Hive Mind is doing well and able to show like, hey guys, like this actually has legs, this has merit, and giving, I guess, a spotlight to factions that people assume just can't cut it, and actually are. And then I would also say being a catalyst for change has been awesome. Like when you see those horrible skews of the numbers, as awful as the like Iron Hands meta was, I don't think that you get a reaction like we got from Games Workshop without hard stats that Pete provides.
Yeah, no, I quoted, but not only you guys, and I often use the 40k stats as a kind of like a benchmark, and at some points, obviously, with Iron Hands was a really good example to talk about some of the Age of Sigmar stats, because I think they don't obviously in any way relate to each other, but trends and ideas are still relatable in both systems, and they both effectively happen around the same format, which I think, so listening to you guys has helped me a lot get better at what I think I'm doing, which I appreciate, so thank you. But similarly, also allows you to see some trends that exist there, and then when they start to exist in a Sigmar 1 or similar, like we had some upcoming stats where we had Sinesh on the hot tip for a long, long time, and then they were doing really well. They got a box release, and then they got their actual battle term release, and then they were hitting just ludicrous numbers, like Iron Hands-ish numbers, for a very consistent amount of time. To the point where, you know, I had to publicly put out something like, these should just be banned from tournaments. And it didn't end up ever being something that occurred, but I'm hoping that helped push the conversation about how serious their FAQ should be later, which is sometimes what you have to do a little bit. But go on, Val.
I just want to say, I have no idea, especially now that we have rational foundations for these things, I have no idea why ban lists are so, just controversial. Like, it blows my mind, like how, like, especially because like we're nerds, guys, like we play other games, there are ban lists in all kinds of other games. What is so wrong about getting rid of problematic rules or units and things? It's a bit of a bugaboo for me, especially when you understand, like, I don't know if anyone read the on Goonhammer recently, there was a former Games Workshop rules writer And he described the rules writing process in kind of graphic detail. And it's exactly what I thought it was. Rob and I have talked about it a lot. And it's essentially, it's guys who are constantly under a deadline crunch with like upset, angry bosses yelling at them, flogging them. There's a drum beating. And they're just pushing out content as fast as they possibly can. And so when people are like, you can't ban stuff because it's not how it was designed. It's not part of the grand vision. Like, these guys are thinking up rules that like shape our lives, like probably while they're pooping and like typing up another codex for a different system. So like, anyway, ban lists. Robbie set me off. I think they should be a thing. And Pete should tell us what to ban.
Pete, thoughts?
I don't want to be that guy, but other than that, yeah, I agree. I don't know what the big deal with ban rate. Like, we saw it with Iron Hands near the end, in particular, the last few weeks before that FAQ finally dropped, the second FAQ. There was a lot of like TOs, like maybe I should just ban the Space Marines Codex, or maybe I should ban all supplements, there was a lot. Like, there were some serious flame wars on Reddit and Facebook over that, just like pages and pages of comments.
But it was obvious that it was non-starter. The like pro ban group was just shouted down every time it was even floated. It's just wild. Sorry.
But it's interesting, right? And I understand both sides, but I do agree. I don't see why we don't why we care that much. There's this whole people should be allowed to play with their toys, and maybe that's it, because unlike with Magic the Gathering and such, you just buy more packs. With this, you're buying, you know, another $80 box and rebuilding it. And I don't know. There's a lot, I guess, you could go into it on the back end, but I think it's more we're just not there yet competitively. I think that we're still nascent in that the concept of competitive 40K, and that's what bothers people more than anything else. So.
Yeah,
no, I mirror both. I think all three of us are aligned. I had the great pleasure of being able to fly over to Canada last year and meet you for the first time, Pete. Obviously, Val, we've met before, and we all got to hang out at the Capital City Bloodbath. And it's one of those things where, especially with live streaming, when you get that condensed experience of a human being, irregardless of whether or not I was in arrhythmia at the time, you both had a giant impact on my heart.
almost too much.
the way that you guys think about it and process the information, I think, is really valid, like really, really valid, and it's a really nice voice to hear. In those communities and to shout it down. But I do recognize sometimes, and Val, I feel like you carry water on this one. Do you feel like you have to, as much as everyone is not happy about the Iron Hand situation as it was, and in case some people at Age of Sigmar people aren't aware, they were running, Pete, you'd be able to give me the numbers better than anyone in the world. How well were they doing, roughly?
So Iron Hands, they had about a 70% win rate, upwards of 80 when you removed the mirror match, when they were at their highest, specifically, like, and that wasn't just one list, that was just Iron Hands in general. So they had won something like 30% of all events. They made up 10% of the meta, just Iron Hands, not Space Marines. Space Marines were about 25% of the meta, but Iron Hands alone were winning about almost one in every three events that they took part in. They made up about 40% of top fours over a 2-3 month period. They were rampant. And then LVO, the Broviathan list, as some people called it, the Team Brohammer, all brought the same list, a Leviathan-based Iron Hands list, that was actually also created in Australia at the same time by Christopher Wright and his team, and they took it to CanCon and dominated with it. So you end up with this list, this Broviathan list, that ended up, I think when I last looked, before I just gave up because I was a little bummed myself about the numbers, it was at like a 93% win rate worldwide. it was silly, like that, how bad it got near the end once, because when it first came out, it was really bad. And I sent a bunch of emails and messages to people like, hey guys, we need to look at this right away. It's only been 2 weeks. And because when Iron Hands released, the first 2 weeks it was available to play in tournaments, 17 of 19 tournaments were won by Iron Hands over that 2 week period. And that's including like little RTTs. It didn't matter. It was just beating everybody. So they nerfed it once.
this is some of the silliest era 40K Stat Center. If you guys want to go back and listen, we didn't know what to do a lot of the time.
Well, I wanted to Pete, after Pete's finished framing it. Sorry, Pete. I'd like you to continue.
I'm going crazy now at this point, but it's I think I've said my piece. Like, it was really bad. They nerfed it down, and then it just took people a couple months to figure out how to make it broken again, right? So
yeah. The point. Thank you for the context that I want to throw to Val is in that time frame, like, because the next thing to talk about when you start to bring in the stats, and I know all of us are very conscious of this, especially with you guys, and we'll talk about the LVO in a bit. All three of us, I feel that competitive wargaming is a really positive thing. It's a really good thing, and seeing more of it, it would be great for the community. It would be great for the hobbyists and the amateur gamers and the hobby gamers as much as it would for the serious pro gamers, if you will. I'm doing that in bunny ears. So Val, how did you find having to try and talk about player skill in an environment where player skill seemed fairly lacking when it was the army power that does that? Because that's something that comes up in Age of Sigmar a lot. And I feel what were your thoughts about that?
So that's, I think, one of the saving graces of what we were doing with 40K Stat Center is that, while one thing is a platform for Pete to talk about the stats and the hard work that he does, also for me, it was a big deal to get winning players, the top players in the meta, on a show regularly to talk about what they were doing, because otherwise it's you have a result, you have the list, and you guess, and you don't get to actually hear how they were thinking about the matchups and how they actually made use of their list, what was important, what wasn't. And also you get to hear them talk, and they're not a bunch of scary robots. They are friendly human beings that you probably would have a lot of fun playing Warhammer against. They're just super good at the technical aspects of the game. And I think the idea there is that you don't have such a heavy focus on winning factions, and you are still able to, you're able to still talk about the narrative of winning players, because they're going into that LVO. There were all kinds of players who made that shift, like Brohammer famously all went to the single list, but then every other sort of top tier in it to win it, chance to win the ITC type player, did some hilarious last second meta moves. Like, they tried to outfox everybody, either by switching to possessed bombs or Nick Nadavati going to White Scars. There are all these change ups that were just really awesome. And that was the sort of gamesmanship at the list level. And although there was a narrow point as to what was viable to win something like the LVO, it still came down to A, who were the best list builders in that narrow point, and then who was able to execute the best. Because at the end of the day, only one person won, and it's probably, one of the best Warhammer players on the planet right now. And that was already something you could have said before he won the LVO. So Mr. Siegler had the pedigree coming in. He had the list, which he pivoted to, which again, I think is a part of player skill, knowing when the wind's blowing against you and you gotta switch to a faster horse. That's exactly what Siegler did, and he won the LVO and the ITC in a come from behind win. That to me is still an exciting narrative, even though, as Pete was saying, 70, some insane percentage of tournaments were being won by a single faction. They weren't all being won by the same person, and that's how you do it.
Yeah, I think that's a really solid point, because one of the things that I've struggled with, and I'd like to know how you do that, because, and I think some of it was buried in there in what you said, is when you are having such an oppressive meta put upon you, it's hard to discuss it in terms of, in positive terms is what I'm trying to say. I know that you always like to look on the brightest side of life, Val, and that's something I think is a huge positive. I really do. I think that's a really good thing.
I'm going to kick this to Pete, because he brought this up, I think, a little bit on BiffPod, and I want him to shout it to you guys in the UK, because I think it's really valid, which is how the Swedes react to shifts in the meta.
Yeah. So whenever I'm trying to really nail down, or anybody, this is a good information for you. If you're really trying to nail down the Warhammer 40K meta, wait for the Westeros Gaming Group, which is the biggest Swedish gaming club competitively, to have an event, and just look at their breakdown of lists. Because the Swedes are absolute demons, all of them. They're just the devil incarnate when it comes to competitive 40K. I don't know if they just... I just don't know if they have every army or what, but what you'll see is whenever like there's a faction that's overperforming in the meta or is probably going to overperform, it will be there in droves. So previous to Iron Hands, when you'd watch a Games of Westeros event, it would be like 20% of their lists were Gene Stealer cults. Like everybody's running Gene Stealer cults. And they were the strongest army probably in the game prior to the Iron Hands drop. At least consistently strong. They weren't crazy numbers, but that was the thing. When Iron Hands came out, like immediate shift. Probably 40% of all Games of Westeros lists were Iron Hands after that. And you'd look at like the top 20 and it would be like 16 Iron Hands lists, an Imperial Fists list, and then maybe two or three of whatever like the third tier Raven Guard or whatever it was. Just because like the Swedes, they don't brook no nonsense with their 40k. You don't see any guys going in there with Space Wolves or Orcs when they're not performing. They just those armies disappear over there. So it's always an intriguing thing to see that way.
So you think go on.
And Rob, I interrupt. I got to give you a 10-minute warning. I'm the last person in my office, and I actually have to leave in about 10 minutes. So just give me a heads up.
Okay, thank you. All right. Well, then, I'll flip through very quickly because some of the quick questions. Then, and I apologize about this. We had one of the really good.
Having a blast. Here all day. I just wanted to give
Maybe we could all just come on and shoot the shit another time. That'd be great. But one of the other things that I thought was really cool that you guys did from the LVO, I got two questions I'm going to ask. I'll ask them after each other, and then that could be us. So one of the cool things you did about the LVO is when you looked at the top percentage of players who already performed really well, and then you pointed out that they amongst themselves had an incredibly good win percentage. So what I'm effectively talking about is player skill versus army pick, and I think that's a really good point to make. Lastly, as my other question, when you get to it, is obviously you guys do the stats for and predominantly talk about ITC when it comes to 40k gaming, which is obviously great, and I have no issues with that at all. Like, do you ever wonder, as content creators, is my last question, that you put a particular onus, and I think it's great that Pete's already talked about Sweden, so probably my point's already been destroyed, but do you think that you put a particular onus on North America, America, and you feel like the rest of the world, how do you try and get those other groups in? That's it. That's me done.
I just want to say that you often on this show refer to the ITC as house rules, which I find endlessly aggravating.
I think it's hilarious.
It's like you're trolling me specifically whenever you do it. The ITC, and Pete talked about this in more specifics, and I'll hand it over to him in a second, but like the ITC is probably expanded because it is a consistent and stable rule base. You've seen it. I remember 2 years ago listening to Tom talk about the ITC in the UK as if it was some sort of like mysterious disease from across the ocean. And, you know, over time, thanks to guys like Acespace and other people in the UK, it's becoming, I think, one of the more dominant formats, not just there, but on the continent. Sweden, Asia, everywhere, it's becoming the dominant format. And if there is something that we could call Tournament 40K, I'd say the ITC is it. Not saying there aren't other formats, but it is easily the most dominant. And we don't, I mean, Pete does every GT he can get data for, so I'll let him talk about that.
Yeah, I'm not. I wasn't saying that it wasn't the dominant format or isn't a dominant format.
Can I drop this mic?
My point was, do you worry that you put too much onus on the North America environment? And do you, in no way do I think that you're trying to enact a point. I was asking how you try and drag those other people into that global community, which I know is something you all really want to do. I was like, does that make sense? So after you, Pete.
Yeah. So, that's like when we started doing a stat center, I think Val and I both were in agreement on this. Like, we explicitly only wanted to talk to people that weren't in North America, because that's always been my greatest joy, is showing people what's going on across the world rather than what's happening here. Cause we all know what's happening here. Because that's like competitive 40K seems to be, we're very open about it in the North America side, particularly like the US, right? Everybody knows about Richard Siegler, Nick Nanavati, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm more interested in what's happening in South Africa. I want to talk about that event. I want to talk about what Japan's doing. I want to talk about Tournament 40K in Germany. I want to talk about what's the Excel spreadsheet events that are being run in Scotland every, week and a half. That's the interested in. And so that's what we try to focus on. And I do bring in every event. I don't care if it's ITC or not. Like 40kstats.com has ETC, custom, whatever events you want to run, Nova style rules. And I put it as a filter so people can say, like, how is it happening in ITC? What are ETC, WTC, whatever you want to call it, rules? How are they performing? Because it all has its merits, and it's really interesting to see, you know, how the game performs with these different rule sets. So yeah, like, while North America definitely is the, you know, the majority of these events that are being run, it's like, my focus has almost always been what's happening outside of North America. I use Australia as an example often. When I started talking 40K on chapter tactics, I would bring up Australian events, you know, day after day after day, and be like, well, you know, this is what's happening over there. Like, this Matt Morisoli guy is incredible. Eric Lathouris, I watched him play a game, and he's like an idiot savant or something. I don't know. Like, it's just like there's really incredible players across the world, and we don't talk about them. And now we do. Now you hear, you know, people talk about Eric and Matt all the time on podcasts. The UK side has always been one where we've known the people, but we maybe haven't known just how good they were, right? Like, I had heard about Manny Chima, Alex Harrison, et cetera, for a couple of years prior to us focusing on them. But then when you start, you know, running the tournament numbers, and then you have them on the show. Manny, we probably had on the show, I don't know, 27 times in 32 episodes, because he just wins everything over there. And he's a delight to talk to. But that's just how it is, and I love it. I'm way more interested in what's happening across the pond than what's happening here.
I'd say too, like, as far as, like, what is the edge of the known 40K universe, I think we're pretty much bound right now by language. So language barrier, I think, is probably that next one. Like, when you accidentally find out about literally the largest team tournament that has ever happened in Spain, which was back in November, like, it was an insane amount of people. It was 400 plus people, bigger than the ATC, bigger than what will be the WTC, but it's in Spanish, so it was kind of blind to us. One of the biggest 40K podcasts, period, is La Voz de Horus, and it's in Spanish. You know, and then outside of that, I think when we were talking about resistance to stats, interestingly, one of the biggest resistors to stats would be TOs. TOs not wanting to make their players post their lists, which is an essential element for Pete's work, and not wanting to post results and round pairings in a public format. Scotland, and it's Wilson in the chat, and other places too. And TOs also getting sort of annoyed that their event is part of this global scene and might, you know, be something that people that aren't in that room care about. And that's really weird to me. And it's sort of eroded as players have pushed for being involved in these global organizations like the ITC, like getting covered on StatCenter, or talked about on podcasts. Like, it sort of gives added credibility, but there's resistance to that because it's an element of change. And anytime something changes in this world, people poop their pants and cry. So, you know.
Good.
Doing it right now.
All right. Well, being aware of the time, although I think we could talk for ages, and I would like to ask you guys so many more questions because
we can come back.
Yeah. Sorry, say that again.
I said we can come back. I just can only do it an hour at a time.
Yeah. And similarly, in Age of Sigmar, we have the same thing. We have TOs are incredibly resistant, even, I think, actually pedantically push against it. They don't want to be involved. They think somehow it's negative and or toxic, which is just obviously asinine. And
some of the biggest TOs in 40K, biggest TOs in 40K are like that. And you know, they're also influential playtesters. So, you know, there's some headwind here, guys.
Good. Yeah, we're so have you guys got any final thoughts? Anything you'd like to say before you got to go? I got to tell you that I fucking love talking to both of you, both on a personal and even in this semi-professional level. Like, you guys are great. So anything you want to say? Say hi.
I got nothing.
I will say something. There was a time where I was talking with Pablo, and he was really bummed out because he felt like streaming wasn't a format that was going to really take off and that people are giving up on it, and that largely because I think the only person who watches every stream is Pete. He not only consumes every tournament stat, but he also consumes about all of the, like, live content that he can. But anyway, I said to Peter, what we're going to need to, like, really, sorry, not to Peter, to Pablo, I said, what are we going to need to really get 40K to that sort of esports level, or even just something where it's more available and people can watch it if they want to, is either you got to have a rich dude who just comes in and says, I would like have a 40K circuit and I want it broadcast, or you need someone who's going to sacrifice their life and live in poverty in order to make it happen, and that's just what they're going to do. And that, folks, is what Rob Symes does. Maybe not quite in poverty, but you have dedicated your life to making this possible and to raising the game for everyone around. And I think you need to be lauded, sir, for the efforts you put into legitimizing this as a game, despite you often drifting into the world of scrubdom in your analysis and editorial. I think there's probably no one else who does more to sort of drive this as a hilarious but legitimate form of competitive gaming. And so hats off to you. That's all I would like to say.
Thanks. That's, now I feel awkward and might cry. Thanks. Pete?
It's true.
Oh, shut up. Like, Pete, you do such amazing stuff. Like, and Val, like, you undersell yourself loads. I'm not, like, trying to, like, this isn't a circle jerk in any way, shape, or form. But, like, no, because Val's a very clever man who knows how to connect the right sorts of people to the right groups. You can't do that. Like terms and services.
Sorry. My bad. Sorry, guys.
But yeah, and you wouldn't be able to do it without LLV doing AOS stats, and without Pete having done the 40K stats. I don't think any of us would be in a position to do something more competent like we are. So I think those are the people that, and then what you do, Val, which is how you drag those things forward. I think by connecting the right people or pushing the right people is also really just people together.
That's right.
Is really good.
I used to say Val knows about 90% of 40K players by the sounds of things.
Yeah. Pete, you got anything you want to say at all?
Man, I probably talk too much. Val needs to leave. I would love to do this again. I always love talking about 40K, especially when I'm locked in my house and not allowed to leave. It makes it even better for me, so it's great. Thanks for having me.
We'll Canadian COVID-19 Tuesdays. We can do this, guys.
I'm in every Tuesday. We'll just hang out.
Every Tuesday at 5.
I also want to give a big I'd also like to give a big shout out to Canhammer Darren, who, you talk about people who help push things forward. Darren dragged all of us from different parts of the world on his dime for Canhammer, for the Capital City Bloodbath, and then put out a 40K stream, which I was over the moon about. Go on, Val.
I also want to, on a serious note, that was good that what he did, but he also was outspoken in the ITCTO's group about shutting down tournaments because he's also a doctor and we have a global pandemic going on. And there was a shocking amount of pushback and yelling at him about doing that. And he just stuck to his guns about we need to shut down tournaments and we need to do it yesterday. We probably covered it a week too much of 40K, yeah, to be honest with you.
I agree.
So hats off to Darren for being, the adult in the room and, talking to people who maybe didn't understand the gravity of the situation and being cool throughout it all and just driving it home, because who knows what kind of impact that might have had.
Yeah, agreed. Well, like, it's a pleasure. Let's do this next Tuesday. I'm in already. Both of you are fantastic. Thank you, anyone who's watched us live. You can find, I'll put in the links below, not only the links to the 40K Stat Center, but also the links to these guys' Twitters or wherever they feel is appropriate that you can reach out to them if you'd like to talk to them about anything. Thank you if you have been watching live or listening to the podcast. Stay hydrated. And thank you to the Honest Wargamer Patreons. You guys are great. We'll see you guys soon. Good luck with your day and have a nice day. Goodbye.